Today's episode is brought to you by Craftsy. Calling all crafters, are you ready to dive deep into your favorite crafting projects and learn new techniques along the way? Then it's time to join Craftsy Premium Membership. March is National Craft Month. Take advantage of this special promotion. For only $1.49, you'll receive a full year of access to expert-led tutorials, patterns, and projects in every category you can imagine. With a massive library of resources at your fingertips, you'll be able to create your best work yet and bring your crafting dreams to life. Don't wait. Sign up now at craftsyoffers.com and discover the endless possibilities of Craftsy Premium Membership. Thank you so much, Craftsy. And now, here's the show. Welcome to episode 261 of the Craft Industry Alliance podcast. I'm Abby Glassenberg. Craft Industry Alliance is a community for craft professionals where you can strengthen your creative business, stay up to date on industry news, and build connections within our supportive trade association. Check it out at craftindustryalliance.org. Today on the show, we're talking about hand-dyed fabrics with my guest, Carla Overland. Carla is the owner of Cherrywood Hand-Dyed Fabrics in Baxter, Minnesota. She's the colorist who creates all the dye formulas and gradations of the gorgeous trademark bundles. Carla has been sewing since she was a little girl and holds a degree in graphic design. She applies her combined passions to all aspects of Cherrywood, from web and print design to color theory, marketing, pattern design, and the Cherrywood Challenge. She's self-published 9 exhibit books and over a dozen patterns. Cherrywood travels all over the U.S., vending at quilt shows, where Carla also gives presentations and teaches classes. She's taught at the Australasian Quilt Festival in Melbourne, Australia, and hosted a bus tour of the Netherlands, Belgium, and France for the Van Gogh Cherrywood Challenge. Carla Overland, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Abby.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And I've been curious about Cherrywood for a long time and an admirer of your beautiful fabric. So I'm excited to learn more of the story of how they come to be. But let's go back a little bit. I know you live in Minnesota now, and that's where the company is based. Is that where you grew up?
Yep, I'm born and raised in West Central Minnesota. So right now I'm in central Minnesota, pretty much right in the middle of the state.
Okay. And what were you like as a kid and what did your parents do for work?
I actually got in my talents from both parents. My mom is very creative. She was a home ec teacher. And my dad is a soil scientist. So I really my left brain, right brain, I feel like I'm switching between those two constantly. And I think it's pretty obvious I got that from them. We were 4-H kids. I have 2 older sisters. So I'm the youngest. It was pretty much a given that I was going to do whatever my big sisters did. So my mom taught us all to sew. We were doing sewing much of our clothing, always doing fashion reviews for 4-H, state fair trips and all that. But I always kind of was a little bit resistant to it, mainly because I had to. So when I left for college and realized that, you know, I can start making my own decisions, I thought, oh, I'm never going to sew again. I don't like it. And like that lasted maybe a year. And my mom bought me a sewing machine, started doing a little more stuff just for myself. And once it was my choice and what I could do, then it really connected. I taught myself to quilt because I signed up for a community ed class. My mom was not a quilter, so I didn't really have that in my background, but I decided to sign up for a class and I got all my stuff together and I was all excited and I showed up with my little Singer sewing machine. And the class had been canceled and nobody told me. So I got mad and I went to a quilt shop and bought myself a magazine and taught myself to make a pattern on my own.
So That's the transition, funny.
The transition from clothing sewing to quilting was pretty easy because quilts lie flat. They don't have to fit like garments do. So that's where the passion was born.
Yeah, that's funny. You're right. Quilts do lie flat for the most part. It's like there could be curves, but the curves that you're sewing are a little bit easier to deal with. And yeah, for sure. I'm interested in your decision to study graphic design when you left home to go to college. Were you doing artwork in high school beyond? I know you were doing 4-H and kind of going with your sisters to do that and sewing clothing and things like that. But your decision to study graphic design maybe shows an inkling toward your own sort of artistic skills.
Yeah, that kind of started in high school in a drafting class. For a while, I thought I was going to be an architect. So I actually got accepted into an architecture school and then started realizing that that was far too technical for what I was really looking for. I wasn't really a fine artist. Like I was never a, I took a few art classes in high school, but I wasn't a painter. I wasn't a sculptor. So once I learned about graphic design, it was that perfect balance and right in the middle. And that kind of satisfied all my needs for a creative outlet. But what I really enjoy about graphic design is taking information and organizing it and making it beautiful.
Right.
You know, it's a communication, but it can be beautiful. So that's the route I went. And interestingly enough, I took a lot of art history. I was in a women in art class, and I learned about a couple of women who were actually making a living as fiber artists, textile artists. And that's when it really clicked that sewing and fabric and fiber is art, and like you can actually make a living from it. It's not just a craft, a hobby, you know, it's not just women's work. So then I think I began to realize that was an actual career path that was out there, although I didn't really come into it for another 10 years.
Okay, right, exactly. So when you graduated, you were a graphic designer. Did you take some jobs in that field right away?
Yes, I worked as a designer in advertising agencies for about 10 or 12 years, everything from corporate design to wedding invitation magazines to boat catalogs, you know, and all the logos and newsletters and stuff in between. But that, in the meantime, I was starting my family. And realizing that the toll that advertising industry was taking from me was too much, and something had to change. And I was lucky enough to meet somebody that changed my life because she wanted me to partner in her hand-dyed fabric business. So that's how that got connected.
Okay, so during those 10 or so years that you were working in the advertising firms, are there things that you now look back on and think that was useful, good experience, even though obviously the work-life balance sounds like it was off, certainly after you had children, but are still other things that, you know, you skills you learned or the way that business works that you learned during that period that you find to be useful now?
Oh, I think everything was useful. Mainly the communicating an idea through a graphic image that's really what quilting is. Some people like to have a message with their quilting or textile art. So you're communicating that through not words, but an image. I've always loved typography. So you'll see a lot of typography in my work. That's a carryover. I learned a lot about photography and setting up, we had to do photo shoots for magazines and things like that. So I'm just very happy that I had that all those years of experience, because I'm still using all those skills to this day.
Yeah, I find that almost everybody I speak to for this show whatever it was they were doing before, and oftentimes there was a before, they entered into the crafts industry. And sometimes it's related, similar to yours, and sometimes it's completely different. But there always seems to be things that are applicable, which I find to be really interesting. Okay, so you met somebody who introduced you to this world of hand-dyed fabric, kind of helping you recall the women that you had studied back in college who did make a living in fiber arts. So how did you meet this person and what was it that they proposed to you?
So when I moved to Brainerd, where I live now, I joined the Quilt Guild. I was very young at the time for a quilter. I was 30. And so it was a little awkward because the average age of the quilter is, you know, between 60 and 70, but they welcomed me in and it was wonderful. And I kept hearing about cherry wood fabrics. And at the time I was just going to Joann Fabrics, buying whatever I could find. Didn't really know, you know, that there was different quality fabric out there. And I would see these quilts in show and tell and just like, oh my gosh, those are gorgeous. So I would always sit in the back of the room and be kind of shy. And I asked, what is cherry wood? And the woman said, well, it's hand-dyed fabric and it's a company based here. Would you like to meet the owner? So she introduced me to Dawn, who was a very soft-spoken woman. And she needed some graphic design help. She needed a logo. She needed a brochure, that kind of thing. So I'm like, hey, let's get together. Maybe we can kind of collaborate. And I still didn't really understand what the whole business was about. But I had her come over to my house and we were going to talk about the logo. And she walked into my house and my mom had made me a double wedding ring quilt from our wedding. And it was gorgeous. It had gradations of color in the ring. And I had it hanging on my wall because it was so special. And Dawn, the founder of Cherrywood, walked into my house and looked at the quilt and said, well, that's Cherrywood. You have that right hanging on your wall. And I didn't realize that, you know, that's what Cherrywood was. So it was very much serendipity that our lives crossed. And she asked me to come to some quilt shows with her to do sales. And as soon as I went to my first national quilt show, I just felt at home. All the color and the texture and, you know, that just like really, really cinched it for me. Unfortunately, Dawn was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and had been battling that for a while. So eventually she proposed to me that I come on as a partner so that I could eventually take over the business, which is actually what happened.
Okay. So your mom had made this quilt, this double wedding ring that was hanging on your wall and had used fabric maybe she found it because it was a local company, but you had mentioned before that she wasn't a quilter. So was she making this for you because of this life cycle event of your wedding?
Yes. So my mom made exactly 3 quilts, one for each daughter. So again, it was rare that I have this quilt. And also that she would come across this cherrywood fabric because at the time, cherrywood was not sold in stores very much at all. So somehow she got her hands on a kit. And I just think it's pretty fascinating that that all overlapped with where I am now.
Right, exactly. And how did Dawn begin dyeing fabric? Because I don't know, when was this in the 90s?
Early 90s.
You know, the quilting industry was quite different then than what we think of it now. And I'm not so sure there were a lot of people who were like, yeah, this is what I want to build a business doing is dyeing fabric for quilters. So do you know how she kind of came across that idea and got started?
Well, I know she took a dyeing class. And she learned the basics of dyeing, like gradations going from a dark to a light, like everybody usually learns in their in those classes. She was fortunate enough to have a family member who was already going to quilt shows as a book vendor. So she was asked to come along and say, you know, hey, bring some of your fabric. Let's see. So she got, you know, her toes wet, and people looked at her fabric and thought, oh, this is gorgeous. She had samples hanging on the wall. And she actually started selling, like designing and selling finished quilts, trip around the world quilts, which were very complex and had her gradations of fabric combined with printed fabric. And that's how the business grew. But she was doing it in her home. She had her kids helping ironing and folding. And the joke is that her kids got tired of going to school with dye spots on their clothes because she was using the same washing machine to dye fabric as she was to wash the kids' clothes. So eventually she purchased another home to move the business into and got herself an employee and started to actually go to quilt shows as Cherrywood Fabrics. And that's how the business grew.
Right. And so she knew about the existence of this business because of this family member who had this book vending business that they were already doing at quilt shows. So that makes a lot of sense. And do you know how she came up with the name Cherrywood? Because it's a great name.
It is. And it's a great story. We live in central Minnesota where there are everybody is surrounded by trees. It's just gorgeous. We're at a lot of lakes and trees. So our town has used tree names as street names. So there's Cottonwood and Berrywood. And she happened to live on Cherrywood. So that's where the name came from.
I see. Yeah, it's a very evocative name. It has a lot. It has color in it. Right. Both cherry and wood are color words. And it has a lot of nature in it. But it also is broad enough. It's not specific to any one thing. So it allows you to sort of be what you want it to be. I love that name. It's really a great name. So I wonder when you first started to go to quilt shows, when you first connected with Dawn and started to travel and do sales with her, what were the quilt shows like then? Because as I mentioned earlier, the industry has changed a lot. It's grown a lot. Yes. The internet came along in between then and now. But, you know, these consumer quilt shows remain popular. They're still going strong. Even after COVID, they were some of the first shows before trade shows, for example, that rebounded. People wanted to come back and come to these events. But looking back, do you remember what they were like back then? Were they bigger, smaller? Was the assortment different? Was the customer different?
They were a lot different, mainly because there weren't as many of them. So there would be maybe 8 national quilt shows that people would talk about. So I remember my first show just being overwhelmed. The booth was packed full of people. So much so that we had to hand fabric over people's heads. Because that was like the only way you could find things, and people would save up their money. And it was like a big event to go to that one national show. Over the years, more and more shows have been added. So the crowds have been distributed a little more because you can pretty much find a nice quilt show every weekend of the year. Cherrywood has always stuck to the larger national quilt shows. We've done some regional shows and some state shows, but because we have to manufacture our own product and sell it and travel, we have to limit to how many shows we can go to a year. So we stick to the ones where we can draw the most audience. So that has been the biggest change is the amount of competition of shows, I guess, might be the right word.
Yeah. That's interesting that today there's one almost every weekend of the year. We're talking in the US or maybe US and Canada. That is really interesting how many more there are. So let's talk a little bit about the dyeing itself. So you mentioned that Dawn had moved the business out of her home and into another home that she had bought an actual house and started to dye the fabric there. And that sounds like around the time that you kind of came on board. So What was the setup like at that time? I want to take a minute now to talk about our sponsor, Craftsy. And here is a message from Craftsy. At Craftsy, we know making. Whether you're new to the handmade life or looking to advance your skills, we have classes for all maker levels and interests. From sewing and knitting to quilting and embroidery, cooking, baking, paper crafts, and more, Craftsy's instructors guide and encourage you, empowering you to turn ideas into realities. And they have an exclusive offer for Craft Industry Alliance podcast listeners. Right now, you can get a whole year of their premium membership for only $1.49. Visit craftsyoffers.com to sign up, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. For only $1.49, you'll get a full year of access to over 2,000 premium full-length classes. March is National Craft Month. Take your craft to new levels this year with Craftsy. If you're an absolute beginner, Craftsy's instructors help build strong foundations as they teach, setting you up for success and helping you fix mistakes as you go. Their enthusiasm and strong teaching style make learning accessible to all. If you're an experience maker, make the resolution to improve your skills in the upcoming year. Craftsy is for you too. From perfecting your fondant skills to tackling complex stitches, from eye-catching garden design to next steps in sourdough, Craftsy has advanced classes in all crafts from instructors who are experts in their field. With over 2,000 classes, including downloadable patterns and recipes, Craftsy has a class and a craft for everyone. Visit craftsyoffers.com today and get a year of Craftsy premium membership for just $1.49. Don't miss out on 99% off for the entire year. Start turning ideas into projects you can be proud of. Get this exclusive offer at craftsyoffers.com. And now back to my conversation with Carla.
Well, it was interesting. We kept it pretty secretive because I don't think people would believe us if they knew what kind of setup we had. And we were producing this gorgeous fabric and shipping it all over the country. And then it became international. So we were shipping all over the world. We had, we dye in washing machines because we're dealing with such volume. Mm. That's kind of a secret that we kept close to our vest. But we let people think that we were like witches with big cauldrons and stirring fabric. And, you know, people didn't know, but because of the volume we're doing, we do use washing machines. There's a lot of steps in the process, but we had washing machines in the basement of this home. We worked on the main level. So like the dining room was our workspace. The kitchen was the shipping department. And then upstairs, we had a couple of bedrooms for storage. And that's when I came on board. That's how Cherrywood was functioning. And I quickly realized that Cherrywood is so special. We needed to really ramp it up and treat it like, and give it a home, treat it like it really should be treated. So it was always my goal from the beginning to get out of that house and get it into a decent building. And I was finally able to achieve that in 2015.
Oh, wow.
That's when I bought out the last partner and started on my own.
And so it's not, I didn't realize there was another partner. So I obviously you had bought into the business when, as you mentioned, Dawn was unfortunately battling ovarian cancer. Was there another partner as well at that time, or were there more than just one other one?
Yes, there was one partner, Linda Argenbright, who was a quilt shop owner. So she brought that to the table. And then Dawn's widower stayed on as a partner after. So
I see.
Yeah. So they were retirement age when I took over. So it was a huge learning curve for me because it was partners that I hadn't chosen. I was
right.
Put together with. So that was difficult. So, you know, I learned a lot from that and also learned that I really did not want a partner. I functioned better being able to make my own decisions. And if I fail, I fail. But if I have a good decision, I needed the freedom to be able to move forward with it.
And had you wanted to be an entrepreneur, You know, I mean, I think that, that's a particular mindset. And if so, had you wanted to be a CEO, you know, like had you really, had that been something that you would have desired, or did it just sort of happen?
No, I did not grow up thinking I would be an entrepreneur.
Because some people do, you know, they have a lemonade stand when they're six. And ever since then, that's all they ever wanted to do. But that's not your story.
No, my story is always wanting to create and make stuff. So being an art major and knowing color and everything, that's my superpower. So all the business part of it has been on the job training, learning as I go, learning from others. There's a small business development center here that I utilize quite a bit in the sale of the business and taking over. I also hired a business coach 4 years ago that has been amazing. And that has really helped me focus and stay on task and grow.
Do you want to recommend who your business coach is?
I would love to. It's Gwen Bortner.
Oh, she's I love Gwen. She's a member of our organization. Her. Yeah.
Yes, she's awesome. In fact, I connected with her at, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a convention. And we were shopping together, and she approached me because she had been kind of watching Cherrywood. And she gave me her card and said, I think I can take you to the next level. And she did. So she's awesome.
Yeah. Do you have specific things you can point to that, you know, because some people might say, well, you know, I might want to work with a business coach, but it's expensive. I mean, it's not super expensive, but it is an expense. And, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to get that return on my investment, but you really clearly have. So I don't know if there's specific things you can point to that kind of came out of your relationship with Gwen.
The main thing is accountability. So I meet with her, it's changed over the years, but I was meeting with her twice a month. And we would talk about what I was working on. She would help me prioritize what really should come first. And then the next meeting, she would always ask me about, okay, how are you doing on this? So when you're running your own business, you don't have a sounding board or somebody to like make sure that you're following up and doing what you're supposed to do. So that accountability was huge for me. I get easily distracted by the next shiny thing that's in my head. So it really helped for her to keep me on track. Another huge thing is planning. I never would have been the type to sit down and do quarterly planning. I didn't even think about quarters at all. Like to me, it was just, here's an idea, let's go with it, you know, and kind of just follow my nose. Working with Gwen has forced me to plan by quarter and do long range planning. And even to the point of like what happens to Cherrywood when I'm gone. So she's forcing me to think forward.
Yeah, those are really valuable things. Yeah.
Yes. The great thing about those planning sessions, she brings in all of her clients and we do it together. So we set aside 2 days every quarter and we do Zoom sessions and we do our planning like in breakout groups, and all of us benefit because none of us are the type to sit down and just do this on our own. And it's just been a great experience.
Yeah, that's great to hear and a really good personal recommendation. So hopefully folks can go and check out Gwen's services. And I think it's maybe most useful for somebody who had a business that was sort of at the size and scale and momentum that Cherrywood was at when you first started working with her. I don't know if you agree with that.
I think so. Cherrywood is kind of prepped for growth when we connected. So yes, I felt like I was standing at the edge of something, and to have somebody to help me take that leap was definitely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. So so you were saying that working with these partners whom you didn't choose, and it wasn't just one partner, like a co-founder, it was multiple partners who had their own sort of interest and stake in the business beyond you was challenging. And I obviously, we don't need to get into all the nitty gritty there, but were there specific things that you found to be specifically challenging in having partners in general that, you know, you realize that made you realize that it would be best for you and your sort of way of working to be out on your own?
Just the flow of ideas and us being on different pages. One of them was an accountant, the widower. He was an accountant, so he's always thinking money and bottom line. Well, that stifled my creativity. No, we can't do that. We've never done it that way. We can't. So I always felt like my wings were clipped. So it's the personality and understanding we all brought something to the table, which was awesome, but the overlap of what we brought, you have to be all on the same page. And I really felt stifled, I guess.
Yeah, I can understand that. And so it sounds like in 2015, you were able to buy out the last partner and then also move to a better setting. So describe that phase.
Oh, that was very stressful, but very exciting. It just took a lot of guts. You can only talk about making a huge change for so long before you have to just do it. So that was my year to just do it. And once I made that decision, it happened very fast. Everything fell into place. We found a building to move to. It was the perfect setup. And it just shows that if you do your homework and prep, and you can only get to a certain point, and then you just have to have guts and jump.
Yeah, so absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that entrepreneurial journey is risk tolerance and being able to accept that there is risk. I mean, it could have all gone wrong, you know, and then only you are on the line. You made the decision and now it was the wrong decision, let's just say, and it's on you to have to figure out what to do next. So that acceptance of risk is, it can be tough. I mean, some people live for that risk. I don't, but I know people who do. So I don't know if you would describe yourself as a risk tolerant person generally, or was that like scary for you?
I have generally been a risk taker. I was always the one doing the scariest rides at the county fair. Hey, let's go hang gliding. I want to learn how to do it. So I would say that's built into my DNA.
That's fascinating. Good for you. That's not built into my DNA, so I'm kind of jealous. That's great. So now in your new facility, maybe you can describe how the setup works. Is it still a basement with the washing machines and then on the main level, the shipping area and then storage, or is it set up in some different sort of way?
Well, it's all one level, which is fabulous. Right there was the biggest change, to not be hauling things up and downstairs. I got a grant to hire a engineer who helped me look at the whole process from a different angle and say, you're touching your fabric too many times. How can we get it from point A to point B without overlapping and cutting out steps and laying out the process the way it really should have been, which was so valuable, because when you're in it and you're so close to it, you can't see how to do it differently. So bringing in somebody who wasn't in it, he just came up with all sorts of shortcuts to make us so much more efficient. So now we have basically three zones of the business. We have I kind of call it the dirty zone, where the dyeing happens, and it is kind of a messy process. So all the stuff happens in one zone. We have a middle zone where we're keeping the finished product, and we can see all of our inventory all at once. I'm not having to go up and down stairs, and like I can see it all. And then we have the clean area with the office and administrative. And we have a small showroom and a store where people can come and shop. So we're already outgrowing our space, of course, because as soon as you have the space, you fill it up, right? but to be able to put some thought into how the business functioned was amazing.
Yeah. What kind of engineer? I mean, that's incredible. And I think would be a great thing for a lot of businesses to hire. So what kind of engineer is that exactly?
You know, I'm not sure what his title was, but he basically, it might have been like a workflow engineer. I don't know if that's the right title, but
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So our washing machine system, we're basically set up like a laundromat, and nobody usually thinks about how a laundromat works and where the water goes. So his main function was to design that for us so that we could have multiple washing machines working. And he designed a trough that all the machines empty into, which is how a laundromat is set up. It's kind of fascinating. If you look behind the machines at a laundromat, oftentimes there's a trough. So in the midst of that, he also must have specialized in just efficient workflow. And I'm not sure, again, the Small Business Development Center helped me find him. So again, I would just offer to people to reach out to these resources. The SBDC was actually free help. So I could go to them with any of these questions and say, this is what I'm wanting to do. How do I do it? And how do I find the people to help me? And all you can do is ask, and you'll just be amazed. You don't know what you don't know. So you need somebody to help you find the people who do know.
That's exactly right. I love that. And I love the attitude of not being afraid to ask, you know, not having to pretend like you know the answer, but instead just be upfront that you don't know the answer and you need to know the answer. And so how can these folks help you? And I think that's a great attitude to have. So that's awesome. So Cherrywood Fabrics has a very specific base cloth, or I don't know if you would call it like the gray goods, or sort of the white cloth that is then dyed. And it's got almost like a suede look to it, or feeling to it. And I wondered if you could describe it and how you kind of, I guess maybe Dawn probably came across it, but maybe how it's different from the other base cloths of the other solid fabrics that are in the quilting market.
Yeah. We're starting out with the unbleached muslin, and muslin is basically, it's a kind of a raw fabric. You're going to see the seeds of the cotton plant are still in there. It's not like totally scrubbed out. The weave is a little bit looser, but we have found a source that is a very high quality muslin. So this is not the kind of fabric you can usually buy. And that, in combination with our unique technique, that's what creates the suede look. And by that, I mean, these are solid colors that we're creating, but they're not exactly solid. We'd like to say they're more than solid. There is a tone on tone variation, kind of splotchy, kind of, every piece is unique. So when you stand back from it and you look at it, you'll say, oh, that's red. But when you look closer, there is, some movement in a slight pattern to it. We often get asked if it is suede or flannel or wool. It's very broken in looking because it goes through so many washes in the process that it is pre-shrunk. The fibers have really closed up, so that weave is very tight, which again adds to the luxury of it. And just that movement in the color itself makes it look so rich and have so much depth. So it's a combination of our gray goods and our technique. And you know, touch by human hands too, I think has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. And so, and color is your magic touch, as you said. So this is right up your alley. And so is the price point from, you know, the sort of price tag on it at retail similar, or is it a higher price point? Because as you said, it has been touched by human hands in a way that, you know, a solid that's been, you know, manufactured maybe at a mill overseas has not really been.
Yes. Yes. Our price point is higher because it's very labor intensive. I have 10 employees. Eight of those employees are working on production. The times that the fabric is touched, you know, we're trying to be more efficient, but we're still working on small batches. We're working on small pieces. We actually, our pieces are only 2 yards at a time, although we can do several 2 yard pieces, but, that ensures that the quality and the look that we want comes out exactly the same every time. And it's hard to have a consistent color in hand-dyed fabric. A lot of hand dyers, they have the luxury of just creating pieces that don't have to be repeated. In Cherrywood, we are repeating those colors because we are, you know, we want to be, if somebody runs out of a color, they want to order it again and it should be the same color. So that's our biggest challenge. There's a lot of variables in dyeing fabric. And I think we do a really good job of keeping consistent color.
Right, and, exactly. Go ahead.
And high quality. So yes, our price point is higher because it takes a lot of labor to create what we create.
Right, exactly. And people want to be able to reorder. You know, we've all been there where you make most of your blocks and then you run out. And right. You want to reorder or you want to remake the same thing again for somebody else or whatever. And you expect that color is going to be the same. And so that requires having, you know, a specific dye recipe that you're using and being able to get that consistency over time, which is really important to the brand's reputation.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And we have a Bible of formulas that we maintain, and it's constantly, we have to constantly monitor it because a dye lot change for us happens because there's a dye lot change in the actual raw goods. Our dyes themselves have dye lots. So we have to keep that in balance with our process as well.
Right. And then the other thing I think some people might be concerned with is, well, what happens when I wash my quilt? Is the red specifically going to bleed onto my white that's right next to my red? And I think with a, I guess, commercial fabric, you could call it, people might be somewhat less concerned, although it still happens, especially with a lower quality commercial fabric. But with a hand-dyed fabric, I could see some people thinking, oh gosh, that's definitely going to happen. So what is your answer to that question?
Well, yes, I think that can be scary for some people. And reds are notorious, no matter what brand, of just being kind of a stinker. we use a product called Synthropol, which is recommended for all hand-dyed fabrics and even batiks. It helps flush out extra dye in the process. And we use it even in our dyeing process. We wash everything twice in hot water to try to flush out extra dye. We have learned over the years that everybody's water is a little different because just our fabric is washed in Minnesota. It might act differently if you live in California and you're using city water or well water. So there are products that on the market that are easy to get that really kind of keep hand-dyed fabrics in control. Otherwise, you can treat it just like any other fabric. You don't have to be afraid of it. A lot of people are making beautiful quilts for walls these days, so they're not really meant to go in the bed. So you don't have to worry about washing the fabric. But as long as you treat it with a little bit of care and wash it separately, pre-wash your fabric before you start the project, things will you know, behave.
Exactly. And you're still doing quilt shows, and quilt shows, as you said, are a big part of your process. So I know we have a lot of members who do quilt shows and listeners, and I'm sure, you know, you've got it down to a science as far as packing, unpacking, setup, display, because you've been doing this for so many years. And you said earlier, you were only going to a select set of shows where you know you can have the amount of customers and the right kind of customers that you need. But any tips for people getting into the quilt show circuit from somebody who's been doing it for a long time?
Well, first of all, don't think that it's easy. It is physically very hard on your body and takes a lot of energy. So pace yourself. Always wear comfortable shoes, and knowing that it's going to take a huge amount of energy up front is probably the smartest thing you can do. It's going to wear you out. If you can take some time after to recover, none of us are getting any younger. So I have now automatically built in a day off on the couch when I get home, and I don't get off the couch because it's not only physically takes a lot of effort, but mentally it's exhilarating because you're meeting your customers. It's amazing. But I'm an introvert naturally, so that drains me. So I really do need to recharge myself afterwards. So, you know, I don't talk to some people for like 24 hours. But again, it's exhilarating at the same time.
Go ahead.
Choose your quilt shows by, you know, you can find lots of quilt shows in different sizes. And I would attend the quilt show first and kind of see who the customers are. Because if your product doesn't really fit, you're just wasting money. You don't want to be the vendor sitting there just alone, not having anybody interested in your product, because people are in geographic areas. Or, you know, if it's a higher priced product and you're in a economically depressed geographical area, maybe that's not the best match for you.
And do you find that you learn a lot from actually meeting your customers? Because there are lots of companies in the quilting industry and in the crafts industry in general who don't do consumer shows. Maybe they just sell direct to consumer online, or maybe they only sell wholesale and they're not really meeting the end consumer on a regular basis. Is there value that you're finding in meeting the consumer on a regular basis, not just once, not just a focus group when you're getting ready to launch, but over and over again, over time?
I find a lot of value in it because of the feedback directly from the people who use the fabric. I'm using my own product as well. I sew with it all the time. You know, so I have a deep understanding of the product. So to be able to communicate that and be on the same level as the end consumer is wonderful. And we're building up a relationship. I really have always wanted to share the story of Cherrywood and the connect as real people. And I know in the past we've been kind of secretive and people assume that we are a factory that's just churning out fabric. And we're not. We have a story to tell, and I'm really putting relationship and sharing that story on a higher priority. So I will never stop doing consumer shows, even though I want to grow the business as a B2B business. I think it's very important for us to still connect with the end consumer every once in a while, because there's so many distractions. We want to build that relationship where they feel like they are part of the Cherrywood family.
And that brings me to the Cherrywood Challenge, because I feel like I hear about your brand most through that. And I wondered if you could describe what it is and also how it came to be, because it's been around for a while now and it's pretty significant. I'm sure there's been a lot of a learning curve for you and learning how to do this sort of thing. But describe for folks, what is the Cherrywood Challenge?
So the Cherrywood Challenge is challenging people to use a very limited color palette to create an art quilt. I choose a theme and a color that's strongly associated with that theme and choose a size. These are small quilts. They're only 20 inches square. And they are challenged to use just a select bundle of fabrics and create an original design. This started, 9 years ago, actually 10 years ago. Challenges have been around forever. It's kind of fun to have a set of rules that you have to abide by and then see what you can come up with within those constraints. But I had never seen in the quilting world where the size was all the same, the color was all the same, and I have the advantage of having cherry wood as the factor that kind of holds everything together. So I came up with my first theme, which was Wicked on Broadway, because I was traveling to a convention in New York City, and we were, as a group, going to go to see Wicked on Broadway. And being a graphic designer, and that logo is just so striking. It's lime green and black, and my favorite color is lime green. So it was kind of a no-brainer that would be my first experiment. I just wanted to, at the time, just try it, and maybe it was one and done. But as soon as we got all the quilts together and hung them up and seen that cohesiveness of having all the same color in the same rich fabric, it was like, oh my gosh, we're onto something. We have to keep doing this. People were already asking, oh my gosh, what's your next challenge? So fast forward to this year, we will be announcing our 10th Cherrywood Challenge this fall. And every year it's getting harder and harder to choose a theme because this contest has grown so much in popularity. We have gone from 100 entries into the contest to almost 500. It's becoming international for sure. We have to select the number of quilts that we keep because we get so many entries. We now have to go through a jury process because we can't possibly exhibit all of them. I publish a book. That's where my graphic design background comes in. My husband does the photography. I put the book together and self-publish on Amazon. And we have side merchandising, and it has really been a lot of fun and really grown our business. Obviously, people are hearing about us because of this challenge.
Right. And they might say, oh, what is that? I want to, and the thing with a challenge like that is it has artistic constraints, which I think is the best way to inspire creativity. I mean, one might think, oh no, open the door as wide as possible. And that's what inspires creativity. But actually saying to people, it needs to be this size, it needs to incorporate these colors or this theme really is what makes those creative juices flow the most, because it's like, well, what can I do within these specific constraints? And then seeing them all together, because those constraints do exist, makes that cohesiveness that you talked about.
Yes, exactly. Some people think that I can't do this with only four colors. For instance, a few years ago, we did Prince the Musician because he's from Minnesota and he's obviously purple. And we had lots of portraits with purple skin. So you have to get over, I can't do this because I don't have a skin color. Well, now you have to get creative and think about things differently because you have these constraints. And I think it makes it easier. So it's amazing what people come up with. I'm blown away every year.
And where does the exhibit take place?
We exhibit it at the shows that we vend at, because that makes sense. So we've had relationships with the show managers for all these years. And we propose this as a special exhibit For instance, American Quilt Society, the Houston Quilts Inc. They are always looking for special exhibits. The Cherrywood Challenge has been so popular that all the venues that got in on the ground floor are pretty much set. Like, we want this every year. We'll take it as long as you have it. So getting it shown for us was fairly easy because we had already been in the industry so long. And sometimes interesting things come up, like galleries, or we did a Bob Ross challenge a few years back, and there is a Bob Ross museum in his hometown. And I love to find those kind of connections. And I reached out to them, told them what we were doing, and they ended up showing the entire exhibit for 3 months. So that's exciting to me because it facilitates growing the quilt industry and having people who don't understand quilts, don't even know that our industry is growing like it is. They're just coming across these pieces of art and learning, oh my gosh, this is what art quilting is. This is actually fabric and thread and paint, and people are doing embellishments. And I love the fact that the challenge is showing the rest of the world outside of quilting just how creative everybody is in all these quilters.
Right. And then people who are at the show, they go, they see the exhibit, and then they come to your booth and want to buy the fabric so they can try it too.
Yes. Yeah. They either they missed out on it. I'm trying to find themes that are very popular, that are known globally, to get people excited. I know there was people who were coming to national quilt shows, paying the admission fee just to get in, just so they could see the Prince exhibit because they're Prince fans. Same with Princess Diana. We've done everybody across the whole world love Princess Diana. So we just finished that exhibit. It was hanging at the Bowen Needle Factory. They have a gallery. They had it hanging there for, I think it was 6 months, they had it hanging in France. So it's just amazing for us to be able to tell the artists, yeah, your quilt is going overseas. Your quilt is hanging in Australia. And they're just thrilled.
Yeah. And it really speaks to the idea that your brand can also be an event or an exhibit or just something else. In other words, like, you're almost equally known for curating and exhibiting this, you know, this challenge as you are for the fabrics themselves. I mean, you know, they work in tandem, obviously, but I think it's worth considering sort of branching out, and your business is almost twofold in that way.
It is. It really has become its own entity. In fact, I have an employee who is devoted to,
I bet,
the logistics of it, the tracking of it. At one time this year, we had 600 small quilts that we were responsible for, which was a little scary, but there's a lot of moving parts. So yes, it has become a separate part of the business. But it helps to look at the customer. It really came from looking at the customer. What is the customer doing with our product? And having a platform for them to grow creatively, to grow creatively, to try something different, it instills their confidence and also kind of bonds us to them. Like, they did it, they put themselves out there, they were part of the Cherrywood Challenge. It's like a badge they wear proudly.
Yeah, it gives them that experience. It's an experience in addition to the product. So I know you had mentioned earlier that you wanted to focus more going forward in the B2B aspect. So right now, a consumer, you know, can come to the Cherrywood website, and look for a specific color bundle that you've assembled, for example, and buy it directly from you. Or they can go to a quilt show and buy directly from you. But you're looking to expand the B2B side. So what does that actually mean? And why have you made that choice?
Well, we've always had some wholesale connections. Usually people have come to us at quilt shows and asked to carry our product in their store. And we're finding that as we grow and get more stores carrying our fabric, we're making it, marketing it, selling it to the customer and selling it to quilt shops. I'm finding that I'm kind of competing with myself. I don't want to compete with the quilt shops that are carrying our fabric. And it simplifies our business to just go straight to B2B. And nowadays, quilt shops are set up for online sales and can handle the capacity that we do. So I'm really looking to, it's basically to simplify my business and still get the product out even farther. Because, you know, somebody in Idaho that never goes to a
show,
how are they going to know about Cherrywood? Their quilt shop owner can carry the fabric. And I really feel like my reach can be farther by doing B2B.
Yeah. And it really supports the local retailer too, because this is a beautiful specialty product that you can get in your local quilt shop, and you're not going to get it in the big box store. You know, this is, and you're not going to necessarily discover it elsewhere. So I think that, you know, we know our local retailers are really the hub of our industry. And so it also supports them and gives them access to that specialty product, which brings people to the store and helps them have a positive discovery experience while they're there.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But supporting the small, the quilt shops are, it's very important. Otherwise, it's a tactile industry. We want to feel it. We want to touch it. And it's hard to get that feeling across of Cherrywood until you touch it, because you can describe the suede look, but it never photographs as well as it is to see it in person.
Right, exactly. And you can also get the expertise from the shop owner while you're there. So you're more likely to have success in your project because you've got the right batting and now you've got the right thread to go with it and you've got help with the pattern, or you can take a class, et cetera. So it really makes sense for people to be able to access this within the context of a local retailer. So I think that's really cool. And I know you are going to be in Paducah in April for Quilt Week. And so tell us what you have planned there.
We are putting together a Cherrywood experience. It's funny that you used that word earlier. We are doing a pop-up shop in an art gallery, and this will be our third year, I believe, doing that, where the artist has agreed to clear out all of her work. We come in and we just take over her whole gallery. We sell the entire week of, they call it Quilt Week. The American Quilter Society is based out of Paducah, so they put on their show at the convention center, and then five blocks away is our gallery. We are also bringing a teacher in to offer classes in another building close by, and we are doing a bourbon tasting because of somebody I've connected to who is a quilter and also a bourbon connoisseur. And it's so fun to find these different ways of looking at selling and creating an experience and creating a thing that is growing that is our own that we can control, but also utilizing the quilt show that is that we've been involved with for over 30 years. So we're kind of doing it in tandem with another event that's going on, but I also have a relationship with AQS. We're kind of growing together. So we're really excited about that kind of selling, where it's becoming a destination. And even in our our studio here in Minnesota. I would love to make it a destination, which it already is becoming that. People come from all over the country on their travels, and they put us on the map and they make sure that they come to visit.
Yeah, people want that experience. That's really, I think, even especially post-COVID, that's really what people want, is they want to have something that's memorable, you know, because if you buy something online or whatever, that's one thing. But if you have the experience, you can look back on it and continue to remember it and have the nostalgia for that time, especially if you're with other people or you've met other people along the way. It adds and enhances so much. It's not just commerce, but it's more than commerce. And so it's memorable. And that, I think, is what we're looking for, to that connection. So that's great. So people should come out in Paducah in April. And I wanted to make sure we get to your list, Carla, because you've got some great things to recommend. And the first one is a book I have not read called All In. And his name, the author, is Mike, is it Michalowicz?
I think it's Michalowicz, yeah.
Okay. So what is this book about?
I think this book just came out, and he's written several other books. I actually got this book from Gwen, my business coach, and it's called How Great Leaders Build Unstoppable Teams. So this is really good if you have employees and building a team, not just based on keeping them because of the salary. They want to be there. They want to be part of the business, and how to make that connection with your staff. So I just loved it so much. I sat down and read it cover to cover in one day. So
that sounds like a great one and a good one for me to read as well. So thank you for that recommendation. You also wanted to recommend is it Saga Journal? What is that?
It's Sakwa and it stands for...
Oh, Sakwa. Sorry. I have a G here. I'm like, this is the Sakwa Journal, but there's a G in that, my...
Right.
It's Sakwa Journal. So I used to write, I wrote some articles for them in the past, and that's the Studio Art Quilt Associates. So what is so appealing to you about their journal?
The visual beauty of it, the work from other people that just inspires me in my own work, because I do like to carve out some time to do textile art for myself. So I find it very inspirational.
That's great. Okay. So that, and you can become a Sakwa member and you will get the journal as part of your membership. And then your last recommendation is an app that I've written about before and also love, and it's called Prequilt.
Yes. I just stumbled upon this and I think this is just amazing what they've come up with. You can create as a designer, you can put your designs on this app. And then other people can color them, like it creates a coloring page. And the different brands of fabric, you can use their brands. I'm very excited to be able to partner with them, and you're going to be able to use Cherry Wood fabric on the platform and insert the colors, try different colors, and then it'll actually calculate how much fabric you need. It's just the coolest thing.
That is super cool and very smart of you to partner with them. Carla, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Craft Industry Alliance podcast. I really enjoyed talking with you. This was really great.
Oh, this was a lot of fun. I just enjoyed talking to you too, as well.
And you've been listening to the Craft Industry Alliance podcast. I'm Abby Glassenberg. Today's episode was sponsored by Craftsy. Calling all crafters. Are you ready to dive deep into your favorite crafting projects and learn new techniques along the way? Then it's time to join Craftsy Premium Membership. March is National Craft Month. Take advantage of this special promotion. For only $1.49, you'll receive a full year of access to expert-led tutorials, patterns, and projects in every category you can imagine. With a massive library of resources at your fingertips, you'll be able to create your best work yet and bring your crafting dreams to life. Don't wait. Sign up now at craftsyoffers.com and discover the endless possibilities of Craftsy Premium Membership. Thank you so much, Craftsy. Craft Industry Alliance is a community for craft professionals. When you become a member of Craft Industry Alliance, you get in-depth coverage of craft industry news, the opportunity to connect with fellow professionals for advice and support, and access to an educational library filled with ideas, tools, and resources to help you as you build your business. Join us at craftindustryalliance.org. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.